Chapter 7. Nicky. The beach. I couldn't follow all of Ronnie's story. Everyone says I'm too scatterbrained. Maybe they're right. All I know is I want to go home. I'm only 18, and I shouldn't be left here all alone. Not with these strangers. I want my mum. My feet are sinking in this stupid sand. If only there was somewhere to run to, but there's nothing. Nothing but water. And it's so bloody hot, it's burning the soles of my feet. Can somebody help me? It might have been better watching the waves. What was I watching again?
You used to love the heat, Nicky. You loved the warm sand. Feel the heat and remember, the gatekeeper says.
I can't. Let me go. I won't tell anyone about you or this place. I promise. Honest, I won't.
Wiggle your toes in the sand, Nicky. Let the soft grains fall through your footsteps and take you elsewhere.
Why won't he help me get away from here? What have I done to make him so mean? But then, on the heat wave, floats a memory of a different kind of sand. It hovers there with the rattling noise of fairground rides and children's distant screams. There was sand that you made into castles, and water you carried from the sea to build moats.
And where were you, Nicky?
Ribbons of memory float back. There was a tower, and donkeys, and Kiss Me Quick hats, pink sugar candy floss, Blackpool. I'd been working in Blackpool. How exhausting it had all been. Too many late nights after work. Too many one-night stands who fled out the door as soon as they thought up an excuse, like their dog had hurt its paw. Guys who promised the moon and stars before a fumble in bed. Who'd swear they weren't like other men and were full of respect. They'd disappear without so much as a kiss goodbye in the morning. So depressing. Tears tumble as the memories return. I've never loved anyone. No one ever gave me the chance. No matter how hard I tried.
Can you smell something, Nicky? Is there something cooking?
The only smell is the salt in the air. Nothing else. I slump to the sand in despair. But then, a hint of garlic wafts in on a breeze, and the scent of fresh warm pizza dough warms my senses. Thick sauces bubble in pots as he stirs, smiling through the steam. His joy embraces me. Gio. His name is Gio, and it was the first time we made love. He sits on the tattered sofa with a glass of red wine in his hand. His long legs stretch out in front of him, and his feet rest on my wee pine table. I'm sprawled alongside him, gazing up, entranced. But should I trust this guy not to break my heart?
Nicky, why we no play the cards? Be exciting, no?
I sigh. We've been playing all week. There isn't much else to do, because Gio doesn't like pubs. He can't be bothered with drunks and their stupid arguments. I guess he sees too much of it at work. It's annoying because it's great to get dressed up for a night out on the town. All the glitter and sparkle and the buzz of getting ready. Wondering what's going to happen. But I've given up asking. I'll knock back Sambuca with my mates instead. It's more fun anyway. That leaves us with the cinema and TV. But the film he's watching is rubbish. Well, okay. There are other things like nice brisk walks or jogging or other goody-two-shoes stuff. What kind of idiots do those for fun? But cards? Cards are bloody boring. I jump onto his lap, wriggle and give him come-to-bed eyes until he spoils the moment by asking if I have something in my eye. I slump back onto the sofa, fold my arms and sulk as he watches his crap film. This is my best satin nightie too. I'm only 18, and it's like going out with a pensioner. I'm not playing more cards tonight. No chance. No way. I mean, he's only 30 and could go to a club if he wanted. No one would say he was too old if he dressed more casually. I grab a tin of lager from the coffee table, pop the ring off, and take a deflated swig. And why hasn't he ever tried to shag me? Is he too old to do that too? Maybe he's being respectful. Yeah, that'll be it. But I want a shag, and I'm gonna get it. How else will I know if he likes me or not? I inch back closer to him, flicking my long hair so that it falls forward onto my face. I hope he'll notice it and romantically sweep it away. Dead clever, eh? Gio grabs me and pulls me onto his lap. He says in a soft whisper, "Bella Nikki, your eyes, they the blue Siciliano sea." He brushes my hair away and stares at me, his big brown eyes darker than before. I giggle from the nervous tension building inside me. He hushes me softly and says, "You like we make the love? You sure?" Oh my, it worked. He traces the outline of my jaw and I close my eyes, unable to watch him. He plays with my hair, then kisses my ears, my neck, and my shoulders, before finally reaching my lips. I kiss him back shyly and nuzzle against him. This is more like it. Fingers glide slowly up my calves, past my knees, and onto my thighs. He lingers there, stroking, teasing, and dispersed in my moans is a sparkle of giggles. He removes my nightie and lowers his lips to my breasts, and my body trembles as he kisses and nibbles. I want to touch him, but I'm not sure how. I've had one-night stands before, but always when drunk. I've never been there, like, right in the moment. I never remember details the next morning. It pains me to even think of how my flabby thighs and stomach might look to him. A soft push, and he places me down onto my back and peels off my thong. He groans, and a flick of his tongue brushes his lips, but my legs close tight to hide from his stare. Why doesn't he turn me over and shag me like the others? I twist away from him and bury my face in a cushion. He'll think me a fool, but no one has really looked at me before, never seen me as a person, just a thing to have some fun with and move on. He might see the pain hidden under my skin, and I can't have that. A whisper in my ear. "My beautiful Bella Nikki." And he lifts my face to his and kisses the tip of my nose. So gentle. A touch that tells me, good girl, and that I'm special. I cuddle into him, and he kisses the top of my head. Gio is showering. I swig down more lager and try to stop grinning like a love-struck teenager. It's so uncool. And anyway, my cheeks are hurting. When he calls me Bella Nikki, it melts my soul. In fact, his accent is as hot as hell. I'll ask him to talk in Italian more when we shag next. Or, as Gio puts it, make love. I yawn. 3 a.m. and I really need to get some sleep. I work tomorrow and the bar will be busy. It should have been my day off, but I agreed to do it because they're short-staffed. I really wish I hadn't now. Why the fizz did I open my big mouth? Slamming the door, I stomp through the hallway and hurl myself onto the bed. I need to phone Susie. She'll have finished her shift and still be awake. I'm bloody raging. I can always tell. You're fucking kidding me. He shagged you, then got all dolled up with aftershave and went out for the night and left you there. She's furious for me. Yeah, I can't believe it either. I told him he's a blooming idiot, like... Where was he going?
I don't know, Susie. He wouldn't say. Not even after I kicked him.
I sob.
You kicked him?
Oh, well. He deserves it. Who the fuck would do that? I hope you told him to never come back.
He's got a key, remember? And my shitty lock doesn't work. Do you think he's married?
What? How the hell could he be married? He's with you all the time. Nah, he's probably off seeing his mates. Don't worry about that, like.
Seeing his mates at 3 in the morning? Prozzy mates, you mean?
No, his mates from the restaurants and that. God's sake, calm down.
I doubt it. We just shagged. He told me he was falling for me. I bloody believed him.
But he can get lost after this. I should have known. They're all the same. Wait and see. You never know.
And why would he have half a bottle of bloody aftershave on if he was only seeing his mates?
Nah, he's away shagging some other lassie. Or maybe even his wife. Hey, Nicky, I've got to get to sleep. You do too. Try not to worry. Sorry, but I'm dying on my feet here. Give us a phone tomorrow, though, eh?
Yeah. Sorry. I needed to talk to someone. Thanks. Night-night.
Well, some pal her. She couldn't get off the phone quick enough. Selfish bitch. I've listened to her disasters and emergencies 1,000 times. I've always been there for her. Always had the time. But obviously she can't be bothered with mine. I gaze around my bedroom. It's all so grotty. Mismatched floral curtains hanging at the windows, so thin that the sun glares through in the mornings. Pink woodchip paper peeling from the walls, and a huge damp stain above the ceiling light that gets darker each night. The chintz carpet is so bare that the floorboards show, and I've cut my feet a few times on the old nails that poke through. The only other piece of furniture, a cheap white chest, stands in the corner. Two of its drawers are broken, and pieces of clothing hang out. No wonder he doesn't want to stay here. What a dump. I pull up the duvet and cocoon myself in its warmth. I'm an idiot for trusting another stupid guy. Tears fall as I try to sleep. My nightmares are so vivid, so real. You're dreaming, only dreaming. I tell myself no man is lurking at the bottom of the bed. But still, it feels real, and I can't wake myself up. Move your body, lift an arm. But my body won't respond, even when I think it has. The man gets closer to the bed, and I'm shaking inside. His cold hands slither around me and prod me. Move! I shout to myself. Move now! Hands shake my shoulders. My eyes burst open and squint against the light. A huge mass looms over me. He really is here. It wasn't a dream after all. A scream tears from my throat. Gio jumps back.
You are crazy, woman. Crazy. Why you shout like this?
Sighing with relief that some nutter isn't going to kill me, I untangle myself from the duvet and sit up, staring. He laughs and says,
Watch out, my bella Nikki. Watch out for the rain.
Then, like a magician, he throws bundles and bundles of banknotes onto the bed. They flutter down. I'm covered in them. They blanket the whole bed, piles and piles of them. He throws another handful into the air and grins down at my huge eyes and open mouth. I'm filled with horror at first. Has he robbed a bank and the police are chasing him down? Am I an accessory? Will the door be rammed open in an early morning raid? But then, a smile spreads over my face and I clamber to my knees. The notes are crisp in my hands and I fling them up into the air to tumble down around me. I could get those new shoes. Maybe a new matching handbag. He's not going to miss a few tenners, is he?
Chapter 8. Mrs. Hawthorne, the beach. Nothing connects. These young women's passions so remote and distant. My hands, wrinkled and lined with age, rise to my throat. All those years of life, slipping away. Times of laughter and love, maybe tears. It should be worrying to be dead, yet it's freeing. Mrs. Hawthorne? There it is again, that voice. Where's it coming from? Should I respond? It's so very peaceful here, and the waves are beguiling. A persistent tapping on my left shoulder. Mrs. Hawthorne, you must respond. If you want to move on, you must show me what love means. It doesn't matter what these strangers think of me or how I died. Why not drift, fade out and dissolve? But then, a sudden surge of loneliness makes me shudder, and a strand of my hair tumbles to the sand. Unclench your fist, Mrs. Hawthorne. A small piece of sea glass nestles in my palm. It's so beautiful. Cornflower blue, so very rare. It's formed from early milk of magnesia bottles. How did I know that? And then, like the waves to the shore, he crashes into me. His blue, intelligent eyes, cornflower blue, like the sea glass in my hand. His loving awkwardness, his soft smile, his silk voice. I clutch onto the memories, begging and grasping for more, afraid they too will evaporate, like the ones before. They're all I've left. I open my arms wide as if to gather them in, and soon, every void in my mind is full of him. My Charles.
Do you mind if I sit here?
I do mind. I want to be left alone with a moment or two free from the angst, but not politely. Of course not. He sits rigidly at the other end of the bench. He's in his late 60s, probably the same age as me. I fan my face. Even in a short-sleeved top, I'm sweating. But he's dressed impeccably in collar and tie. A grassy hill stretches before us, past our little bench, down to the river. Clusters of families sit with picnic baskets and bright coloured blankets. The smell of burgers and sausages hangs in the air, and a small group gathers around a smoky barbecue. A few boys kick around a football. Behind us, children shriek with delight in a small play park. On benches like ours, couples whisper their secrets to each other, and the world softens for a moment. His little white dog circles around his feet, then slumps wearily onto the grass. Unexpectedly, a wash of emotion passes over me, and I bend over, sobbing, as if someone has punched me in the stomach rather than crushed my heart. He doesn't speak for a moment or two, but he's looking my way. Sorry for the intrusion. I wondered if you were quite all right. May I be of some help? I mutter. I'm fine, thank you. Then avoid his gaze. My handbag is lying on the grass. It has attracted the attention of some of the park's bees. Hopefully a gentle kick with my foot will make them settle elsewhere. But instead, this angers them, and they buzz closer to me.
Much more of them than I first thought. I scream and draw back. His body jerks at my sudden alarm.
I'll get it. I'll do it. You stay back.
He leaps to his feet, but forgets about the little dog lying curled up in front of him. He trips. The dog yelps and anxiously circles him.
Jack! You silly dog!
He shouts, as though the dog itself has caused the accident. The dog's leash winds itself ever tighter around his ankles. He flails at the bees buzzing around his head and topples forward like an oak tree being felled in slow motion until he hits the grass with a soft thud. The dog barks excitedly and jumps around him. Then the bees fly off, as though their job is done. And despite myself, I burst out laughing. The noise is alien. Sadness has been a part of me for so very long. He blushes.
Hello, I'm Charles. I'm so sorry about this quite ungentlemanly display.
I laugh even more at his formal language, and he disentangles himself and sits back on the bench. His salt and pepper hair is full, swept back and in need of a good barber. His voice is soft, the tone educated. Repeatedly he puffs on an electronic vape, inhaling as if it were oxygen. It barely leaves his mouth. Pulling out a packet of cigarettes from my rescued bag, I turn towards him. Would you like a real one?
Why not? I think that would be a splendid idea.
He leaps from the bench with childish joy, but trips again and knocks my cigarettes out of my hand. You're so clumsy. I grin as he bends to retrieve them. He smiles and we light up. A little girl with hair in red-ribboned bunches giggles as she skips past our bench. Her mother lifts her and twirls her high in the air. Their laughter cleanses our silence. How long have you been on the vapes? I ask.
Let me see. It must be about 5 years now. But you always miss the real thing.
Blushing, I shift position on the bench. Oh, I shouldn't have given you that. He smiles. His blue eyes are intelligent, but spilling with sadness. Something has hurt him. I'm sure of that. He turns and says,
Isn't the park lovely? Who'd have thought that this was in the heart of Edinburgh? I often used to walk Jack here, but I haven't for a while. This is the first time in months. One does forget how beautiful nature is.
One does, doesn't one? I tease. It's my first time here. I found it by accident. But yes, it's peaceful. I won't tell him my real reason for being here. Why would he even care? What would it matter to a stranger?
In August, they've a festival. With second-hand bookstalls, craft beers, llamas for the children to pet, burger vans. Not that I eat burgers. I've been vegetarian for years. Never eat something that once had a face, I say.
Oh, you're a vegetarian. I bet you're a hippie as well. Two of the things I can't stand. It's a joke, but maybe with a hint of truth. The festival sounds great, though. I bet it's really busy then.
I'm sure it is, but in truth, I've never been. I don't like crowds much. I prefer the walkways along the canal, although I do have to keep an eye on Jack. It isn't the first time he's tripped me over, and I wouldn't like to test the depths of the water. Once we took Jack...
His head lowers to the grass, and his voice breaks.
My wife died.
The words are so bleak,
so void of any intonation. His pain is so intense that I could reach out and touch it. He is broken, perhaps even more than I am. He continues, "Jack is my only reason to live on. Once he's gone, well..." Charles stands. "Apologies, I need to go." And he grabs Jack from under his feet, cradles him into his arms like a newborn baby, and walks away. From the way his body shakes, he's crying. Jack's fluffy face peeks over his shoulder as he stumbles across the grass. Even he is forlorn. Charles is drowning in sorrow and needs someone to help him breathe. But that person isn't me. I've nothing left to give, for my pain is as deadly as his. I have to get back to the room soon. My sisters will be scared. Yet something draws me to him. Perhaps it's his kindness, or that he's made me laugh. And then it comes to me. Maybe Charles is the one I can save. I shout after him, "Charles, I'll be here tomorrow. Same time, same bench." The park is almost deserted, perhaps because it's a Monday afternoon and everyone else is back at work or school. Or it could be because rain is forecast. The sky is heavy, dark, thick clouds getting closer. But I'd promised Charles that I'd be here. A dog barks, making me look up and smile expectantly as I walk, but it's some silly stranger with a pet poodle. In my Waitrose bag, the titbits jostle against each other, and their rustling delights me. I'm rather pleased with myself, because I remembered Charles is a vegetarian and bought lots of cheesy things and salads. None of them look that appetizing. But maybe he'll be enticed by the strawberry tarts. Carefully avoiding a patch of hard, sticky gum, I settle down onto the bench, take a deep breath of fresh air, and grab a cigarette from my cardigan pocket. I've put some doggy treats in there for Jack. I blow out smoke. I placed my tartan rug in my bag this morning. Charles's eyes will sparkle with delight at my thoughtful little gesture. He'll lay it down gently on the grass and we'll sit there drinking and eating, dunking our crisps into dips. We'll have our own little picnic. We'll be part of the fun. My hand grazes against the ragged edges of carvings that have been cut into the wood of the bench. My fingers trace along the ridges. I wonder who MK and LG were, and if they're still in love. Perhaps they too once sat on this bench, waiting for someone. Longing for something delightful to happen. Scraping some stray hairs back from my face, I shiver and pull my cardigan tighter. The wind has a bite now. A quick check of my mobile. No messages. At least nothing bad has happened since I left. It will be fine for a few minutes more, at least. It isn't something to think about now. My next cigarette refuses to light, the flame of my lighter blowing out again and again. My hand cups around it to shield it from the breeze, and I sigh with relief at the first exhale. Maybe Charles isn't coming after all. The picnic bag leans against my feet, and I kick it away. Another check for news from my family on the mobile. All is quiet. Googling poodles for something to do leaves me lost in a trail of clickbait. A Labrador in a pink tutu laps ice cream while a toddler sobs beside him. I chuckle, but feel sorry for the poor child. According to the number of likes and comments, It's only me that sees the cruelty. Charles appears, fidgeting in front of me. He doesn't know what to do with himself, and he stares down at the grass. Where's Jack? I ask. Oh. Charles spins around and searches the park, steps one way and then the other. Has Jack scampered off somewhere? I jump up to help, but we move forward and awkwardly crash into each other. Charles jumps back as if burnt by the contact. Actually, I forgot. I left him in the house. It's a bit cold for him today. I burst out laughing. What? Did I say something funny? My God, he's a dog. They're meant to be outside. It's hardly bloody Antarctica. Well, I have to look after Jack. He's all I have left. Giles's shoulders slump, and his eyes redden, as if stung by the bees from yesterday. Why don't you sit down? And he does, as far from me as he possibly can, his body pressed in tight to the armrest. He lifts his vape to his mouth. I'm so damn sorry for him. But what should I say? Ask about his wife? Would that make matters worse? Or do I look like a selfish bitch if I don't? It's almost like he's built a shield around him, armor to keep everyone out. But he's come today. He's come out to the park. He's come to meet me. He's dressed so faultlessly, perhaps a little old-fashioned, but he has style. Beige cords, cream linen blazer, blue shirt, and peeking out from his top pocket, a matching polka dot handkerchief. The handkerchief is so quaint. The picnic, that will cheer him up. I've got us something to eat, and I remembered you're a vegetarian. I smile. We've got cheese and fruits I've never heard of before. Let's have a picnic, just the two of us. You know, like all those people did yesterday. Charles stares down at his empty hands. I'm not hungry, but you go ahead. I swallow hard to keep the disappointment at bay. So much for the picnic and my excitement sharing it. Ages spent in Waitrose choosing just the right thing. What a silly waste of time. I don't even want to think about the tartan rug sitting lonely in my bag. I grab a cigarette, and without offering him one, light up. Neither of us speaks. Magpies shriek hungrily at a clump of leftovers that lie discarded at the river edge. A small boy, about 3, dressed up as Batman, is perched high on his father's shoulders. He giggles and babbles as they both make their way to the exit. A low drone cuts through the park, and the smell of freshly cut grass drifts along to our bench. Why would someone mow when rain is imminent? I wrinkle my nose and reach into my bag for a tissue. Another check of my phone. I'm so very sorry to have distressed you, Charles says. I'm fine. It's the freshly cut grass. I get hay fever. He tilts his chin down and leans forward. No, I was rude. It was unforgivable of me. I'm so sorry to have upset you. I'm not at my best at the moment. We've been alone, Jack and me, for quite some time. I might have forgotten how to be around people, especially when they show me kindness. Do forgive me. It's fine, Charles. Really. It's hay fever. Don't be daft. You've not done anything wrong. I was disappointed, yes, but it's not an issue. It was a silly idea. I have them all the time. It wasn't silly. It was kind. And me? I've been a big buffoon about it. Perhaps we could have a little something to eat now? My mobile buzzes. I grab it and, as I listen, my world disintegrates. The picnic, the bench, the park. None of that matters anymore. Somehow I make it to my feet. I need to go, Charles. He moves towards me and gently pats my shoulders. Are you quite all right? May I help? Do you need anything? I snatch my bag, throw it over my shoulder, then scream in frustration when its contents tumble out. Cigarettes scatter all around my feet. My phone and purse lie upended on the bench, and the silly tartan rug settles across Charles's brown brogues. As I gather everything up, he offers it back to me. I push it away, shake my head, and tell him to keep the useless thing. Just let me go. My father is dying. As I turn and stride away, my vision blurs. My legs tremble, and an intense pain grips my body. It's as though I'm gliding along the pathway, that my feet aren't touching reality. I can't endure going to see Dad, and yet, how can I not? Charles's words sail towards me. Same bench, same time, tomorrow. Chapter 9. Ronnie, Liverpool. It's time for Plan Snare him to spring into action. And what better timing than today? Valentine's Day. Carpe diem. I've a change of sexy clothes in my bag for the scene. Graham won't see me coming. It's been about 2 months. Very casually we're dating. I say that, but it's rather rigidly set. I'm his Wednesday girl, and I never sleep over. I guess someone else has Thursdays and Fridays. As for Saturdays, he likes to go out by himself. A Saturday night is great for pickups because there's no work the next day. Everyone's out for fun, he said, while I smiled and pretended his words didn't pulverize my self-esteem. But it won't matter in the long run. None of it will, for I'll win. And that's all that matters, right? I'd chosen the presents carefully. Nothing expensive that would make him think that I was being too serious. That would scare him off. And they have to remind him of me. I'd bought 3. Exhibit A. Black Fred Perry polo shirt in skinny fit. He loves to wear his clothes tight to show off his muscles. So, he'll love this and realise I know his style. Exhibit B. Small stuffed red devil in satin shorts. It holds a little red heart, but because it's disguised as a saucy devil, I'll get away with it. Subtle, but not full-on hearts in your face. Exhibit C. Red velvet flogger. We haven't used one of these, and he'll fantasise about its touch and me brandishing it. Job done. Of course, he won't buy me anything. Graham doesn't believe in Valentine's, for all the usual excuses men give. In the pub at the end of his street, I sip white wine and wrap my weapons. I keep my eye on the window in case he drives past. This has to be planned perfectly. I have to make sure he's in. Now, do I write "Love Ronnie" or just "Ronnie" on the card? Will the word "love" scare the shit out of him? Or will he see it as a throwaway phrase? I could overthink this for hours. So, before I change my mind,
A scribble. Love ya. There. Laid back, but still getting the word invading his personal space. Telling the driver to wait, I jump out of the cab, ring the bell, and arrange the presents at his front door. I will myself to walk away, slowly back down the path. It's Thursday, and if my timing is right, he's still at home. As I lift the cab handle, he appears.
Ronnie?
With a casual fire, a faucet flick of the hair, I turn and smile.
Oh, hey, Graham. Didn't expect to see you.
He stands with the presents awkwardly held in his hands.
You shouldn't have done this, but thanks.
Oh, it's some little things I picked up at the shops. I thought you'd like them. I'd taken hours choosing, but he couldn't know that.
Why don't you come in, Ronnie? You didn't need to leave them and go.
The temptation to comply is overwhelming. He's stunning. But I've got plans for tonight, and as gorgeous as he is, they don't include him. Sorry, babe. Gotta run. It's Thursday and I've got a hot date. With that, I enter the cab and wave bye. As we drive off, my head is giddy with the thrill of it all. I place the champagne flute on the mirrored table and kick off my red heels. Soft music serenades candlelight that flickers shadows across the bedroom walls. I unzip my leather skirt and undress. As I wrap myself in a silk kimono and let my hair down, a shiver of anticipation runs through me. I adore these first few moments. Graham knew I went on other dates. He went on them too. But I've never made it so obvious before. Fuck, I've never turned him down before either. He'll not be happy. What with him thinking he's God's gift and all that. His face dropped like a prune when the cab drove off. It was hilarious. And a taste of his own blunt medicine. As I slip under the velvet throw of my king-size bed, I test that everything is within hand's reach. I hate when I've got to get out of the warmth again. Graham never showed jealousy. In fact, he encouraged me to go on dates, although he didn't like to hear about them in any kind of detail. It just made him feel better about doing it himself. It normalised his behaviour. But he'll be seething tonight, being turned down for someone else. Especially when he has my presence to remind him of my sweetness. The sugar someone else will get. Ah well, enough of him. It's time for my hot date. I reach over to the bedside cabinet and take a sip of champagne. Delicious. Then I grab the family tub of chocolate ice cream and the TV remote. As the soaps play, I swirl the chocolate around my mouth and let the stress of the day melt away.
There's something for you on your desk, miss. It arrived by courier at 7 this morning.
I thank the school janitor and walk up the staircase to my office. What the hell will this be? It will be a miracle if it's the new textbooks I've ordered. I open the door. The room is fragrant with a heady scent of lilies. And on my desk sits a beautiful bouquet, wrapped up in pastel cellophane. My breath falters. How gorgeous. I never receive flowers, not even on my birthday. Who could have sent them? But then a thought hits me. They'd better not be from Big Davy D. I grab the card.
Thanks for the presents, Ron. Hope you had a good date yesterday. How about dinner tonight? Graham. X.
And just like that, I've been promoted from Wednesday girl to Friday.
I'm going up in the world,
and I'm so much closer to the prize. As I walk to the playground, I hum the tune to Blondie's One Way or Another. I might not sing like Debbie Harry, but fuck, I have her sass.
Chapter 10. Nicky. Blackpool. 2 double vodkas and coke. Lots of ice.
Bloody cheek.
I haven't even asked them for their order. So rude. Not even a please.
I pretend I haven't heard and make myself look busy arranging wine glasses on the shelf below. They're in their 30s, boobs spilling up over low-cut tops, tight miniskirts up to their asses. They're a bit too old to be dressed that way. Heavy red gloss is slathered across the blonde's pout, and she keeps batting away a fly that hovers near her mouth. I'd pay that fly in sugar if it got stuck to one of those lips.
"Excuse me,"
she says.
"Oh, I didn't see you there. What can I get you?"
"Two double vodkas and Coke."
"Ice with those?"
"Yeah, thanks." I prepare their drinks as they chat and giggle with each other. I've been in the job a few weeks and I bloody hate it. The constant noise, the yelling, the dolly buds. Most of all, I hate the red aprons and hair in ponytail rules. It makes me feel so ugly when everyone else is all dressed up for a night on the town. The two women whisper together, so I grab the ice bucket and edge closer to hear.
"He's here."
The brunette giggles. Giggling like a teenager when you're 30-odd is really pathetic.
"So he is. He's gorgeous, eh?"
The blonde slathers on more sticky gloss, then throws the tube into her tiny glitter purse. The fly still hovers. "Go on, Mr. Fly. You can do it." The brunette turns towards me, looks at the drinks in my hand, and taps her red talons on the counter. I slow down to annoy her and select each piece of ice with the silver-plated tongs, as instructed by Mr. Health and Safety on my first day. Let them wait. The blonde bursts into action, poking her friend.
"Don't look! I said don't look! He's coming!"
Caught up in all the excitement, I crook my neck. These women are as high as kites, although I must admit, I'm dying to see this god for myself. The brunette adjusts her boobs and the blonde flicks back her hair.
"Joe,"
he says, and kisses both their cheeks. Their arms wrap around his body, and they do a little threesome jig. I slam their drinks on the bar. I can't actually believe it. The god is Gio. And as they totter off on their 5-inch heels, he throws a wink at me. I bat it back with a scowl. Gio had asked me to come work here so that we could spend more time together. Both of us work nights, and he said it made perfect sense for us to do it together. It kind of did, but I hate the garlic that stinks through my clothes while every other woman wafts strawberries and flowers. Are his air kisses really just for tips? He better not be playing me for a fool. But then, why would he want me to work with him if he's lying all along?
2 cappuccinos, Nikki.
Great. I wrap my blistered hands in a wet dishcloth, hold the jug of milk under the steam tube, and stand back from the violent hissing. The milk froths and gurgles, and as usual splutters all over my hands. I hate the bloody machine. I slosh the boiling milk into the coffee cups, and the waiter rushes them away. I really hope every other customer tonight hates coffee like me. I wash the milk jug, run my hands under cold water, then rub them down my apron to dry. The air is smothered with the scent of cheese and freshly baked dough. A tang of hunger ripples in my stomach, and I sneak 2 mint chocolates, the ones meant for customers, into my mouth. The chocolate melts deliciously, but I hate mint. The restaurant is closing, and drink orders have been stacked high all night. I've hardly had a moment to stalk Gio's whereabouts. He could be snogging someone behind the fake marble pillars for all I know, but surely not. All the flirting for tips is to help us save, or so he says. A bushy moustache with its stout manager attached twitches and calls my name.
"Nikki, we're running out of beer. Go run down to the cellar and bring up a few crates. I'll man the bar."
I nearly freak out on the spot, but manage to keep myself still. Lorenzo, can't you get the beer? I'll stay here. He shakes his head, and his moustache bristles as if it might flee for freedom.
No can do, Nicky. It's your job. Come on, I'll open it up for you.
I'd rather face the evils of the coffee machine. He pulls up the wooden lid of the cellar and switches on the dim light. There's a flight of rickety steps going down, and crates of bottles in various sizes spread across the floor. I can't do it. But if I don't, I'll look like a fool or, worse, get fired. And we've been saving up so hard. I move tentatively, downwards, one step, two steps, then freeze. Something scuttles along the cellar floor, and I scramble back up. I imagine little beasties running up and down my arms. Shuddering, I scrub them away. I can't do it. I can't. He scrunches up his nose and narrows his eyes, the moustache twitching to the right. He leans over me and says, "It's your job, and I'm not going down there in this new suit."
What a big pig.
I back up against the wall and burst into tears. I hate the dark and all those creepy crawlies. I can't stand them. I'm not going down there amongst them all. He huffs a huge exaggerated sigh and is about to say something else when, to my horror, Gio walks in.
Fabulous. Now he's going to see me snivelling. Will the night get any worse?
Nicky, why you cry?
Gio booms as he strides towards the bar. He turns towards Lorenzo.
What'd you do to Nicky? I told her she'd to go get the beer, Giovanni. It's her job.
You touch her.
His face is thunderous with rage.
No. No, I only tell her go down the cellar and get the beer.
Mr. Moustache moves towards me, and I can't breathe, so I push him away. He staggers, teetering over the cellar opening until his hand grabs the counter to steady himself. Bloody hell. I run off to the ladies' toilet, bolt the door and sink to the floor. What a fool I've made of myself. There's no way I'm coming out of this toilet tonight.
Nicky.
Gio can call all he wants. I'm not going to answer. Reaching over for more toilet roll, I blow my nose.
Nicky, why you be hiding? Come out now. Get lost.
He's taken ages to find me. He doesn't even care.
Nicky, you don't need go the cellar.
Oh, has Mr. Big Moustache gone down himself after all? Good for him, but I'm still not moving.
Nicky, come out. It's how you call Silly Billy.
Who cares? It was bad enough that I felt like shit before, but now it's even worse. Panda eyes isn't a good look.
Nicky, I go. I be back.
Great. Now he's left me, and I really wanted him to coax me back out. Flushing the toilet, I wet some tissue and rub under my eyes. Maybe I'll run out now, go through the back door before anyone sees me leave. But I don't have my purse or keys for the flat.
Gio slumps down to the floor, his back thumping against the door.
Nicky, I have the cheese pizza and the Coca-Cola and the ice. You eat, yes?
Hell, I'm starving. I imagine the taste of the gooey melted cheese in my mouth and the sharp fizz of a cold Coke. But I'm not going to give in. I'm not a dog performing tricks at the promise of food. A paper plate with a slice of pizza slides under the door, and before I know it, I've taken a huge bite.
You were chatting up those women all night and giving them kisses. I saw you.
Gio laughs. It makes me angrier, and I threw the half-eaten pizza at the toilet door.
It's not funny.
But it is, Bella Nikki, I tell you many time, I nice. We make more money. The money we need for the restaurant of ours. This pizza, it's cold.
He's told me that before, lots of times. We've been saving up for a few months, ever since the big wind that he'd scattered all over my bed. And I can't wait until we have our own place. It's our dream. I've already planned the colour of the tablecloths and designed the menus.
What happened with the cellar?
No need worry. I tell manager I go for beer. There is lots there now. I got it. And next time you tell me, I go again.
But I feel like an idiot, Gio.
No. The man, he the idiot. Not you.
Me? I do not like the shark. So I no go deep in the sea.
Same thing. What did you tell him?
I told him, my Nikki, she no like the daddy with the long legs, so she no go again.
Laughing, I open the door. He stands, kisses my forehead, and twirls me up in his arms. He always makes me feel so protected. He isn't going to be like every other man. I need to trust him more.
After we eat, we go casino. We make lots of money tonight for our restaurant. Then you, no need do the drinkies again.
I've always wanted to see the casino, but he normally doesn't let me go. He always says I'll ruin his focus. I bet it's all swanky and buzzing with excitement. How much will we win?
Chapter 11. Mrs. Hawthorne, Edinburgh. There's an urgency trying to push me forward, a compulsion to race along the sterile corridors, sprint through the haze of lemon bleach. Everything is telling me to run, run, dump that silly bag, throw that stupid coat off, remove those shoes, run, run, and save him. But I can't move. I'm too afraid. I slump into a hospital chair. I remember the dad of my childhood, the one who chased me and my sisters through golden dunes. Catch me, Daddy, catch me. We'd scream in excitement, hoping we'd be caught up into his tanned arms. He'd throw us into the air, twirl us around, then laughingly toss us into the sea. The coldness of the water would shock us, yet our shrieks of delight would bounce off the waves, and he'd stand there watching, so happy with himself that he'd made us laugh. So strong is my memory that I can smell the salt of the sea, and if I look hard enough, I might catch a glimpse of us, all those many innocent years ago, still playing in the waves. You never quite knew what was true about my dad. Had he really been to Africa, or walked 300 miles home because he'd spent all his holiday money at the races? Had he swum the channel not once, but twice? Lived in Hollywood? Long ago, lazy Sunday mornings, me and my sisters listened for Mum to go downstairs to prepare his usual Sunday stew. As soon as she did, we'd throw back our blankets, run through and excitedly climb into his bed, clambering all over each other to get the best spot, cuddled, cosseted, and safe, waiting for a tale from our very own storyteller. Once upon a time, there was a man walking home drunk from the pub when he suddenly tripped over a £10 note and fell down an open manhole into a jungle with ferocious snakes and venomous lions. My sister, Judy, always replied,
"But Dad,
It's snakes that are venomous and lions that are ferocious.
Not in this jungle. He'd warn, blue eyes sparkling. It's the snakes that are ferocious here. Then he'd jump and tickle us, and we'd all giggle and wriggle and shout.
What happened next, Dad?
I have to face those ferocious snakes alone now. So I stand, put on my armour of a brave face, and brace for the moment. Turning the corner, I enter the ward and walk through the green cubicle curtains. My younger sisters, Judy and Mary, sit huddled around his bed in frigid silence, ashen and drained like ghosts. We're all so old. We hug. Then I cautiously turn towards Dad. His head hangs limply to the side, his eyes vacant, skin ash grey. The shock makes me step back, disbelief pressing a fist to my mouth. I'd seen him only 12 hours before. He'd been sitting in the care home garden, overlooking the park, joking, a cup of tea by his side. I turn away from the horror, shield my face, and flee from the ward. Mary runs after me and puts her arms around me, but I shrug her away. I need space, somewhere to breathe. She sighs and goes back to the vigil, but it's a while before I compose myself enough to return. A nurse walks by. I stroke Dad's head and want to fall to my knees and beg, please bring him back. Please save him. I want her to know he isn't this old man choking for breath. He isn't this stranger with sunken bones, gasping and rattling. He's young and handsome, funny and cheeky, bold, yet shy when he is in posh company. He has the twinkle of the night stars in his eyes, and he likes to sing all the wrong words to all the old musicals and dance badly at parties all night. He loves books, movies, and stodgy cakes. He's a gadget man, although he can't fix anything, and he loves the soaps on TV. How will he know what happens in Emmerdale now? He doesn't deserve this. I want to scream to her, that's my daddy. But I don't. I just sit there instead, like the coward I am, silent like the rest. All three of us dazed, numb, accepting. I edge closer and hold his frail hands in mine, paper-thin skin, so cold. The same hands that once shoveled heavy coal in cramped dark mine shafts, that hoisted bricks up onto strong shoulders, that sat me on his knee. Moistening his cracked open lips with sticks of pink sponge, I tell him, it's okay, Dad. I'm here. You waited and I'm here. Everyone is here. We love you. We love you so very much. My voice breaks and I swallow back the emotion, my throat burning with the tension. For now, I need to be strong. He won't hear my tears. And I release him. It's all right. We'll be okay. You can go. You can go now, Dad. Go and see Gran. We love you. As the last callous breath leaves the man he once was, my childhood truly dies. I kiss his lips for the last time and tell him, it's been a wondrous fairy tale,
A glorious fantasy of jungles and hump-backed whales, princesses fighting with green, silvery dragons, and Batman rescuing them all. I grip his hand tighter. On days when things get too hard, I'll remember you and us. Good night, Daddy. Sleep well. The next day dawns like nothing momentous has happened. From my window, the birds still shriek and the dustbins on the street still clatter. How can that be? We should have all stopped with him, ceased to exist. It's wrong, disrespectful. Who will fill his space? An image from the care home tears at my mind, and I shake my head and banish it. I can't remember his face that way. Where are all my tears? Don't I care enough? My hands tremble, and the cigarette lighter slips from my hand to the wooden floor with a crash and clang. I flinch from yet another intrusion and struggle to find my breath. The lighter is Dad's. A gold-tarnished Zippo we'd bought a few birthdays ago. John Wayne etched on the front, and his name, Cash, on the back. Like a little boy, he'd bounced in his chair when he first saw it, rubbing a finger along the worn grooves. I can almost feel his touch. I flick the lighter on and off, and stare at the dwindling flame, until the gas runs out. My sister's phone and invite me round, but I can't bear to go. All their children, all their friends, all the small talk and nibbles. I slump back in bed, wrap the duvet around me and close out the world. But then I remember Charles. He'll be waiting at the bench, in the park, just outside the care home. I press my lips together and chew on the thought. It will be impossible to move from this safe haven. My body is too heavy to face the task. Nothing left of me to give, not even a tear. But Charles will be there, waiting. Somehow, I know if he has to, he'll wait the whole day. My hand finds its way to my mouth, and my teeth tear at the ragged skin near my nails. When the sharp sting of blood arrives, I welcome it. There's no choice but to go, even if it's for a minute or two. Guilt has shadowed me since last night. If I add any more, I'll suffocate. I shuffle from the trees. The bench is empty. Charles must have either left or changed his mind. I haven't the energy to care which, but I rest here for a while. I light a cigarette, and the smoke curls into the air. A thought flashes through my mind. How would the burning tip feel against my skin?
Jack! Jack, come back here at once! Don't jump up! Get down!
As Charles comes bounding, arms flailing, Jack drags his long leash and barks at my feet.
I'm so sorry about Jack! Jack, get down! I must have missed you when you arrived. I was sitting by the river, but I did keep an eye on the bench.
It's fine. I've only just arrived.
Oh, good. Good.
He looks around and pulls Jack tight on his leash.
Well, I wondered if you would care to perhaps come sit there with me. It's behind us. A rather lovely little spot. The breeze from the river is delightful.
Okay. I reply with a shrug, and pick up my bag and follow Charles down. It's a longer walk than I expected. We leave the main path and instead follow a shallow dirt track. The trees are thicker down here and the riverbank less kempt. I can't see our bench, but Charles is right. It's peaceful.
I hope you like it,
he says as he leads me round a corner. And there, spread carefully along the grass, lies my tartan rug I'd left last time. On top, a wicker basket lined in red gingham is full of sandwiches and slices of cake. China plates with delicate roses lie next to white napkins and crystal wine glasses. A bottle of wine sits inside a steel bucket that brims with melted ice.
I thought we could have that picnic,
Charles says. My eyes brim with tears, and a sting of emotion steals my breath. I crumple, dizzy, to the grass, drenched in sweat. A hard lump somewhere in my throat threatens to choke me.
I'm dreadfully sorry about your father. How is he?
He died. Charles opens his arms and, sobbing, I collapse into them and weep for the longest time. And Charles, releasing his own grief, cries too. Under a canvas of careless clouds that scatter the sky, he holds me until soft shadows lengthen and mask our pain. Afterward, I wonder if that's why he chose such a secluded spot. We're sipping wine and gazing at the river. Charles, why don't you get a mobile phone so we can text or call or send photos to each other? He jumps up excitedly from the rug.
What a truly great idea. Now, where would one buy one of those mobile objects? One of the sorts that does all that?
And I astound myself with a laugh.